Moreover, for many of these features, as we shall discuss, string theory offers a far fuller and more satisfying explanation than is found in the standard model. These developments convinced many physicists that string theory was well on its way to fulfilling its promise of being the ultimate unified theory. Nonetheless, over and over again, string theorists encountered a significant stumbling block. In theoretical physics research, one is frequently confronted with equations that are just too hard to understand or analyze. Typically, physicists don't give up, but try to solve the equations approximately. The situation in string theory is even more difficult. Even determining the equations themselves has proved to be so difficult that only approximate versions of them have so far been deduced. String theorists have thereby been limited to finding approximate solutions to approximate equations. After the few years of dramatic progress during the first superstring revolution, physicists found that the approximations being used were inadequate to answer a number of essential questions hindering further developments. With no concrete proposals for going beyond the approximate methods, many physicists working on string theory grew frustrated and returned to their previous lines of research. For those who remained, the late 1980s and early 1990s were trying times. Like a golden treasure securely locked in a safe and visible only through a tiny, tantalizing peephole, the beauty and promise of string theory beckoned, but no one had the key to unlock its power. Long dry spells were periodically punctuated by important discoveries, but it was clear to everyone in the field that new methods with the power to go beyond the previous approximations were required. Then, in a breathtaking lecture at the Strings 1995 conference held at the University of Southern California, a lecture that stunned a packed audience of the world's top physicists, Edward Witten announced a plan for taking the next step, thereby igniting the second superstring revolution. String theorists, as of this writing, are working vigorously to sharpen a set of new methods that promise to overcome the theoretical obstacles previously encountered. The difficulties that lie ahead will severely test the technical might of the world's superstring theorists, but the light at the end of the tunnel, although still distant, may finally be becoming visible. In this chapter, and a number that follow, we shall describe the understanding of string theory that emerged from the first superstring revolution and subsequent work prior to the second superstring revolution. From time to time, we will indicate new insights stemming from the latter. Our discussion of these most recent advances will come in chapters 12 and 13. The Greeks' atoms again? As we mentioned at the outset of this chapter, string theory claims that if the presumed point particles of the standard model could be examined with a precision significantly beyond our present capacity, each would be seen to be made of a single, tiny, oscillating loop of string. For reasons that will become clear, the length of a typical string loop is about the Planck length, about 100 billion billion, 10 to the 20th power, times smaller than an atomic nucleus. It is no wonder that our present-day experiments are unable to resolve the microscopic stringy nature of matter. Strings are minute even on the scales set by subatomic particles. We would need an accelerator to slam matter together with energies some million billion times more powerful than any previously constructed in order to reveal directly that a string is not a point particle. We will describe shortly the stunning implications that follow from replacing point particles by strings, but let's first address a more basic question. What are strings made of? There are two possible answers to this question. First, strings are truly fundamental. They are atoms, uncuttable constituents, in the truest sense of the ancient Greeks. As the absolute smallest constituents of anything and everything, they represent the end of the line, the last of the Russian Matryoshka dolls, in the numerous layers of substructure in the microscopic world. From this perspective, even though strings have spatial extent, the question of their composition is without any content. Were strings to be made of something smaller, they would not be fundamental. Instead, whatever strings were composed of would immediately displace them and lay claim to being an even more basic constituent of the universe. Using our linguistic analogy, paragraphs are made of sentences, sentences are made of words, and words are made of letters. What makes up a letter? From a linguistic standpoint, that's the end of the line. Letters are letters. They are the fundamental building blocks of written language. There is no further substructure. Questioning their composition has no meaning. Similarly, a string is simply a string. As there is nothing more fundamental, it can't be described as being composed of any other substance. That's the first answer. The second answer is based on the simple fact that as yet we do not know if string theory is a correct or final theory of nature. If string theory is truly off the mark, then, well, we can forget strings and the irrelevant question of their composition. Although this is a possibility, research since the mid-1980s overwhelmingly points toward its being extremely unlikely. But history surely has taught us that every time our understanding of the universe deepens, we find yet smaller microscopic ingredients constituting a finer level of matter. And so another possibility, should strings fail to be the final theory, is that they are one more layer in the cosmic onion, a layer that becomes visible at the Planck length, although not the final layer. In this case, strings could be made up of yet smaller structures. String theorists have raised and continue to pursue this possibility. To date, there are intriguing hints in theoretical studies that strings may have further substructure, but there is as yet no definitive evidence. Only time and intense research will supply the final word on this question. Aside from a few speculations in chapters 12 and 15, for our discussion here, we approach strings in the manner proposed in the first answer. That is, we will take strings to be nature's most fundamental ingredient. Unification through string theory. Besides its inability to incorporate the gravitational force, the standard model has another shortcoming. There is no explanation for the details of its construction. Why did nature select the particular list of particles and forces outlined in previous chapters? Why do the 19 parameters that describe these ingredients quantitatively have the values that they do? You can't help feeling that their number and detailed properties seem so arbitrary. Is there a deeper understanding lurking behind these seemingly random ingredients, or were the detailed physical properties of the universe chosen by happenstance? The standard model itself cannot possibly offer an explanation, since it takes the list of particles and their properties as experimentally measured input. Just as the performance of the stock market cannot be used to determine the value of your portfolio without the input data of your initial investments, the standard model cannot be used to make any predictions without the input data of the fundamental particle properties. After experimental particle physicists fastidiously measure these data, theorists can then use the standard model to make testable predictions, such as what should happen when particular particles are slammed together in an accelerator. But the standard model can no more explain the fundamental particle properties than the Dow Jones average today can explain your initial investment in stocks 10 years ago. In fact, had experiments revealed a somewhat different particle content in the microscopic world, possibly interacting with somewhat different forces, these changes could have been fairly easily incorporated in the standard model by providing the theory with different input parameters. The structure of the standard model, in this sense, is too flexible to be able to explain the properties of the elementary particles, as it could have accommodated a range of possibilities. String theory is dramatically different. It is a unique and inflexible theoretical edifice. It requires no input beyond a single number, described below, that sets the benchmark scale for measurements. All properties of the microworld are within the realm of its explanatory power. To understand this, let's first think about more familiar strings, such as those on a violin. Each such string can undergo a huge variety, in fact infinite in number, of different vibrational patterns known as resonances. These are the wave patterns whose peaks and troughs are evenly spaced and fit perfectly between the string's two fixed endpoints. Our ears sense these different resonant vibrational patterns as different musical notes. The strings in string theory have similar properties. There are resonant vibrational patterns that the string can support by virtue of their evenly spaced peaks and troughs, exactly fitting along its spatial extent. Here's the central fact. Just as the different vibrational patterns of a violin string give rise to different musical notes, the different vibrational patterns of a fundamental string give rise to different masses and force charges. As this is a crucial point, let's say it again. According to string theory, the properties of an elementary particle, its mass and its various force charges, are determined by the precise resonant pattern of vibration that its internal string executes. It's easiest to understand this association for a particle's mass. The energy of a particular vibrational string pattern depends on its amplitude, the maximum displacement between peaks and troughs, and its wavelength, the separation between one peak and the next. The greater the amplitude and the shorter the wavelength, the greater the energy. This reflects what you would expect intuitively. More frantic vibrational patterns have more energy, while less frantic ones have less energy. This is again familiar, as violin strings that are plucked more vigorously will vibrate more wildly, while those plucked more gingerly will vibrate more gently. Now, from special relativity, we know that energy and mass are two sides of the same coin. Greater energy means greater mass and vice versa. Thus, according to string theory, the mass of an elementary particle is determined by the energy of the vibrational pattern of its internal string. Heavier particles have internal strings that vibrate more energetically, while lighter particles have internal strings that vibrate less energetically. Since the mass of a particle determines its gravitational properties, we see that there is a direct association between the pattern of string vibration and a particle's response to the gravitational force. Although the reasoning involved is somewhat more abstract, physicists have found that a similar alignment exists between other detailed aspects of a string's pattern of vibration and its properties vis-à-vis other forces. The electric charge, the weak charge, and the strong charge carried by a particular string, for instance, are determined by the precise way it vibrates. Moreover, exactly the same idea holds for the messenger particles themselves. Particles like photons, weak gauge bosons, and gluons are yet other resonant patterns of string vibration. And of particular importance, among the vibrational string patterns, one matches perfectly the properties of the graviton, ensuring that gravity is an integral part of string theory. So we see that, according to string theory, the observed properties of each elementary particle arise because its internal string undergoes a particular resonant vibrational pattern. This perspective differs sharply from that espoused by physicists before the discovery of string theory. In the earlier perspective, the differences among the fundamental particles were explained by saying that, in effect, each particle species was cut from a different fabric. Although each particle was viewed as elementary, the kind of stuff each embodied was thought to be different. Electron stuff, for example, had negative electric charge, while neutrino stuff had no electric charge. String theory alters this picture radically by declaring that the stuff of all matter and all forces is the same. Each elementary particle is composed of a single string, that is, each particle is a single string, and all strings are absolutely identical. Differences between the particles arise because their respective strings undergo different resonant vibrational patterns. What appear to be different elementary particles are actually different notes on a fundamental string. The universe, being composed of an enormous number of these vibrating strings, is akin to a cosmic symphony. This overview shows how string theory offers a truly wonderful unifying framework. Every particle of matter and every transmitter of force consists of a string whose pattern of vibration is its fingerprint. Because every physical event, process, or occurrence in the universe is, at its most elementary level, describable in terms of forces acting between these elementary material constituents, string theory provides the promise of a single, all-inclusive, unified description of the physical universe, a theory of everything, TOE. The Music of String Theory. Even though string theory does away with the previous concept of structureless elementary particles, old language dies hard, especially when it provides an accurate description of reality down to the most minute of distance scales. Following the common practice of the field, we shall therefore continue to refer to elementary particles, yet we will always mean what appear to be elementary particles but are actually tiny pieces of vibrating string. In the preceding section, we propose that the masses and the force charges of such elementary particles are the result of the way in which their respective strings are vibrating. This leads us to the following realization. If we can work out precisely the allowed resonant vibrational patterns of fundamental strings, the notes, so to speak, that they can play, we should be able to explain the observed properties of the elementary particles. For the first time, therefore, string theory sets up a framework for explaining the properties of the particles observed in nature. At this stage, then, we should grab hold of a string and pluck it in all sorts of ways to determine the possible resonant patterns of vibration. If string theory is right, we should find that the possible patterns yield exactly the observed properties of the fundamental particles of matter and force particles, the strong, electromagnetic, weak, and gravity. Of course, a string is too small to carry out this experiment literally as described. Rather, by using mathematical descriptions, we can theoretically pluck a string. In the mid-1980s, many string adherents believed that the mathematical analysis required for doing this was on the verge of being able to explain every detailed property of the universe on its most microscopic level. Some enthusiastic physicists declared that the TOE had finally been discovered. More than a decade of hindsight has shown that the euphoria generated by this belief was premature. String theory has the makings of a TOE, but a number of hurdles remain, preventing us from deducing the spectrum of string vibrations with the precision necessary to compare with experimental results. At the present time, therefore, we do not know if the fundamental characteristics of our universe can be explained by string theory. As we will discuss in Chapter 9, under certain assumptions that we will clearly state, string theory can give rise to a universe with properties that are in qualitative agreement with the known particle and force data. But extracting detailed numerical predictions from the theory is currently beyond our abilities. And so, although the framework of string theory, unlike that of the point particle standard model, is capable of giving an explanation for why the particles and forces have the properties they do, we have not, as yet, been able to extract it. But remarkably, string theory is so rich and far-reaching that, even though we cannot yet determine its most detailed properties, we are able to gain insight into a wealth of the new physical phenomena that follow from the theory, as we will see in subsequent chapters. In the following chapters, we shall also discuss the status of the hurdles in some detail, but it is instructive first to understand them at a general level. Strings in the world around us come with a variety of tensions. The string laced through a pair of shoes, for example, is usually quite slack compared to the string stretched from one end of a violin to another. Both of these, in turn, are under far less tension than the steel strings of a piano. The one number that string theory requires in order to set its overall scale is the corresponding tension on its loops. How is this tension determined? Well, If we could pluck a fundamental string, we would learn about its stiffness, and in this way, we could measure its tension much as is done to measure the tension of more familiar everyday strings. But since fundamental strings are so tiny, this approach cannot be carried out, and a more indirect method is called for. In 1974, when Shirk and Schwartz proposed that one particular pattern of string vibration was the graviton particle, they were able to exploit such an indirect approach and thereby predict the tension on the strings of string theory. Their calculations revealed that the strength of the force transmitted by the proposed graviton pattern of string vibration is inversely proportional to the string's tension. And since the graviton is supposed to transmit the gravitational force, a force that is intrinsically quite feeble, they found that this implies a colossal tension of 1,000,000,000,000,000,000,000, 10 to the 39th power, tons, the so-called Planck tension. Fundamental strings are therefore extremely stiff compared with more familiar examples. This has three important consequences. Three consequences of stiff strings. First, whereas the ends of a violin or a piano string are pinned down, ensuring that they have a fixed length, no analogous constraining frame pins down the size of a fundamental string. Instead, the huge string tension causes the loops of string theory to contract to a minuscule size. Detailed calculation reveals that being under Planck tension translates into a typical string having Planck length, 10 to the minus 33 centimeters, as previously mentioned. Second, because of the enormous tension, the typical energy of a vibrating loop in string theory is extremely high. To understand this, we note that the greater the tension a string is under, the harder it is to get it to vibrate. For instance, it's far easier to pluck a violin string and set it vibrating than it is to pluck a piano string. Two strings, therefore, that are under different tension and are vibrating in precisely the same way will not have the same energy. The string with higher tension will have more energy than the string with lower tension, since more energy must be exerted to set it in motion. This alerts us to the fact that the energy of a vibrating string is determined by two things: the precise manner in which it vibrates, more frantic patterns corresponding to higher energies, and the tension of the string, higher tension corresponding to higher energy. At first, this description might lead you to think that by taking on ever gentler vibrational patterns, patterns with ever smaller amplitudes and fewer peaks and troughs, a string can embody less and less energy. But as we found in Chapter 4 in a different context, quantum mechanics tells us that this reasoning is not right. Like all vibrations or wave-like disturbances, quantum mechanics implies that they can exist only in discrete units. Roughly speaking, just as the money carried by a comrade in the warehouse is a whole number multiple of the monetary denomination with which he or she is entrusted, the energy embodied in a string vibrational pattern is a whole number multiple of a minimal energy denomination. In particular, this minimal energy denomination is proportional to the tension of the string, and it is also proportional to the number of peaks and troughs in the particular vibrational pattern, while the whole number multiple is determined by the amplitude of the vibrational pattern. The key point for the present discussion is this. Since the minimal energy denominations are proportional to the string's tension, and since this tension is enormous, the fundamental minimal energies are, on the usual scales of elementary particle physics, similarly huge. They are multiples of what is known as the Planck energy. To get a sense of scale, if we translate the Planck energy into a mass using Einstein's famous conversion formula, E equals mc squared, they correspond to masses that are on the order of 10,000,000,000,000, 10 to the 19th power, times that of a proton. This gargantuan mass, by elementary particle standards, is known as the Planck mass. It's about equal to the mass of a grain of dust or a collection of a million average bacteria. And so, the typical mass equivalent of a vibrating loop in string theory is generally some whole number, 1, 2, 3, times the Planck mass. Physicists often express this by saying that the natural or typical energy scale, and hence mass scale, of string theory is the Planck scale. This raises a crucial question directly related to the goal of reproducing the fundamental and force particle properties. If the natural energy scale of string theory is some 10 billion billion times that of a proton, how can it possibly account for the far lighter particles, electrons, quarks, photons, and so on, making up the world around us? The answer, once again, comes from quantum mechanics. The uncertainty principle ensures that nothing is ever perfectly at rest. All objects undergo quantum jitter, for if they didn't, we would know where they were and how fast they were moving with complete precision, in violation of Heisenberg's dictum. This holds true for the loops in string theory as well. No matter how placid a string appears, it will always experience some amount of quantum vibration. The remarkable thing, as originally worked out in the 1970s, is that there can be energy cancellations between these quantum jitters and the more intuitive kind of string vibrations previously discussed. In effect, through the weirdness of quantum mechanics, the energy associated with the quantum jitters of a string is negative, and this reduces the overall energy content of a vibrating string by an amount that is roughly equal to Planck energy. This means that the lowest energy vibrational string patterns, those energies we would naively expect to be about equal to the Planck energy, i.e. 1 times the Planck energy, are largely cancelled, thereby yielding relatively low net energy vibrations, energies whose corresponding mass equivalents are in the neighborhood of matter and force particle masses. It is these lowest energy vibrational patterns, therefore, that should provide contact between the theoretical description of strings and the experimentally accessible world of particle physics. As an important example, Schirk and Schwartz found that for the vibrational pattern whose properties make it a candidate for the graviton messenger particle, the energy cancellations are perfect, resulting in a zero-mass gravitational force particle. This is precisely what is expected for the graviton. The gravitational force is transmitted at light speed, and only massless particles travel at this maximal velocity. But low-energy vibrational combinations are very much the exception rather than the rule. The more typical vibrating fundamental string corresponds to a particle whose mass is billions upon billions times greater than that of the proton. This tells us that comparatively light fundamental particles should arise, in a sense, from the fine mist above the roaring ocean of energetic strings. Even a particle as heavy as the top quark, with a mass about 189 times that of the proton, can arise from a vibrating string only if the string's enormous characteristic Planck scale energy is cancelled by the jitters of quantum uncertainty to better than 1 part in 100 million billion. It's as if you were playing The Price is Right and Bob Barker gives you $10 billion and challenges you to purchase products that will cost, cancel, so to speak, all but 189 of the dollars, not a dollar more or less. Coming up with such an enormous yet precise expenditure without being privy to the exact prices of the individual items would severely tax the acumen of even the world's most expert shoppers. In string theory, where the currency is energy as opposed to money, approximate calculations have conclusively shown that analogous energy cancellations certainly can occur, but for reasons that will become increasingly clear in subsequent chapters, verifying the cancellations to such a high level of precision is generally beyond our theoretical ken at present. Even so, as indicated before, we shall see that many other properties of string theory that are less sensitive to these finest of details can be extracted and understood with confidence. This takes us to the third consequence of the enormous value of the string tension. Strings can execute an infinite number of different vibrational patterns. For instance, we discuss the beginnings of a never-ending sequence of possibilities characterized by an ever greater number of peaks and troughs. Doesn't this mean that there would have to be a corresponding never-ending sequence of elementary particles? The answer is yes. If string theory is right, each of the infinitely many resonant patterns of string vibration should correspond to an elementary particle. An essential point, however, is that the high string tension ensures that all but a few of these vibrational patterns will correspond to extremely heavy particles, the few being the lowest energy vibrations that have near-perfect cancellations with quantum string jitters. And again, the term heavy here means many times heavier than the Planck mass. As our most powerful particle accelerators can reach energies only on the order of 1,000 times the proton mass, less than a millionth of a billionth of the Planck energy, we are very far from being able to search in the laboratory for any of these new particles predicted by string theory. There are more indirect approaches by which we could search for them, though. For instance, the energies involved at the birth of the universe would have been high enough to produce these particles copiously. In general, one would not expect them to survive to the present day, as such super-heavy particles are usually unstable, relinquishing their enormous mass by decaying into a cascade of ever lighter particles, ending with the familiar, relatively light particles in the world around us. However, it is possible that such a super-heavy vibrational string state, a relic from the Big Bang, did survive to the present. Finding such particles, as we discuss more fully in Chapter 9, would be a monumental discovery, to say the least. Gravity and quantum mechanics in string theory. The unified framework that string theory presents is compelling, but its real attraction is the ability to ameliorate the hostilities between the gravitational force and quantum mechanics. Recall that the problem in merging general relativity and quantum mechanics turns up when the central tenet of the former, that space and time constitute a smoothly curving geometrical structure, confronts the essential feature of the latter, that everything in the universe, including the fabric of space and time, undergoes quantum fluctuations that become increasingly turbulent when probed on smaller and smaller distance scales. On sub-Planck scale distances, the quantum undulations are so violent that they destroy the notion of a smoothly curving geometrical space. This means that general relativity breaks down. String theory softens the violent quantum undulations by smearing out the short-distance properties of space. There is a rough and a more precise answer to the question of what this really means and how it resolves the conflict. We discuss each in turn. The rough answer. Although it sounds unsophisticated, one way that we learn about the structure of an object is by hurling other things at it and observing the precise way in which they are deflected. We are able to see things, for example, because our eyes collect and our brains decode information carried by photons as they bounce off of objects being viewed. Particle accelerators are based on the same principle. They hurl bits of matter, such as electrons and protons, at each other as well as at other targets, and elaborate detectors analyze the resulting spray of debris to determine the architecture of the objects involved. As a general rule, the size of the probe particle that we use sets a lower limit to the length scale to which we are sensitive. To get a feel for what this important statement means, imagine that Slim and Jim decide to get some culture by enrolling in a drawing class. As the semester progresses, Jim becomes increasingly irritated by Slim's growing proficiency as an artist and challenges him to an unusual contest. He proposes that they each take a peach pit, secure it in a vise, and draw their most accurate still-life renditions. The unusual feature of Jim's challenge is that neither he nor Slim will be allowed to look at the peach pits. Instead, each is allowed to learn about the size, shape, and features of his peach pit only by shooting things, other than photons, at the pit and observing how they are deflected. Unbeknownst to Slim, Jim fills Slim's shooter with marbles, but fills his own shooter with far smaller 5mm plastic pellets. They both turn on their shooters, and the competition begins.